As we entered the cave, I could feel the water cool off considerably from the warmer water that we had initially dropped into. I followed my guide deeper into the cave, and the last weak rays of the sun faded away into inky blackness. I switched on my flashlight and continued deeper, following the light ahead of me. I felt something large swim by me, and I jerked instinctively, and I spun around to see what it was. As I turned, my flashlight landed on some intricate carvings in the stone, and I swam closer to study them further. I was pretty sure that these caves had always been underwater, and the pictogram seemed too intricate for someone to have done in a single dive, and as I followed the carvings around the cave, I realized that they were all over, above and below me. It was at that point that I realized I didn't see my guide's flashlight at all, and I started to panic as I didn't even know which way was up, and I tried to calm myself so I wouldn't suck up my entire oxygen supply when suddenly I saw a pair of glowing green eyes emerge from under my feet. Multiple pairs of eyes flashed to life, and I screamed and kicked back hard, and I saw a flash as I slammed my head into the rocks behind me. I could feel my regulator fall out of my mouth, and everything went dark. I awoke with a cough, and I rolled on my side, vomiting up seawater. I wiped the bile and snot from my face and realized I was lying on a bed of coins. There were torches burning in what I assumed to be a cave, and the floor glimmered in the flickering light. Then, I saw seven pairs of glowing green eyes emerge from the darkness, and I watched as a man with seven cobra heads sprouted from his neck walked over to me. My heart racing, one of the snake heads opened its mouth to reveal long, sharp fangs, and then it spoke, saying, "Glad to see you're finally awake. Let me introduce myself. My name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast." Since this is, in a lot of ways, a continuation from last week's episode, the Naga, alternatively a race of snake people or multi-headed dragons, are often linked to the creature from last week's episode, the Garuda. The Naga are the Garuda's natural enemy, partially because in the Hindu mythology, the Naga and Garuda are born to two different wives of the Vedic sage Kashyapa Prajapati. The story goes that one wife asked for 1,000 children, who would end up being the Naga, and the other wife asked for just 2 children, but who would be equal to the other 1,000 kids. But I'm not going to get into this intense sibling rivalry, as I want to give the Naga their due. It was said that these creatures could take on the form of a half-human, half-cobra, a full human, or a full serpent snake form. They're usually associated with bodies of water and often protect treasure with their superhuman strength as well as potent venom. While they obviously can seem dangerous to humans, in Hindu mythology, they're often benevolent creatures, even though they have their serious beef with the other benevolent creature, the Garuda. Like the Garuda, the Naga are also found in various cultures and religions across Southeast Asia, including Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Sri Lanka. The form of the Naga vary from water dragons to the form I have mostly known them as being half-snake, half-human creatures, but the culture where the Naga most interested me was of the Khmer people of Cambodia. In Khmer mythology, Nagas can also shapeshift, representing rain and the connection between the human realm and that of the gods. And they also happen to have various roles, powers, and symbology based on the number of heads they have. And this multiple snake head feature, that's sort of reminiscent of the Hydra, which I covered in a previous episode, got me really fascinated with all the variety of Nagas that show up in Cambodian culture. And that got me thinking about all the different ways a person can show up as a leader. And I think there are 7 different postures a leader can take that are effective in today's modern workplace. A leader can shift back and forth and occupy multiple of these postures at the same time, and I'd argue that the best leaders do this fluidly to react to the specific circumstances that they're in. As I mentioned last week, the first posture a leader can take is that of the logistics person or the support role. And if you missed it, definitely check out the Garuda episode from last week to get more info on this role specifically, but today I wanted to take an overview at the other postures of leadership. The second posture is that of an individual contributor. We often talk about the individual contributor when we distinguish between people who excel at their jobs and those who are better at managing people. But I think this posture is still a path forward as a leader. By doing good work, collaborating well with others, and setting an example of how to show up, an individual contributor can still make a huge impact on culture without ever having to directly manage someone else. The third posture of leadership is that of a cheerleader. By encouraging people when it's hard, praising their efforts when it's not, and constantly reframing things by looking for the positive side of the situation, the cheerleader can provide the emotional support needed for people who are struggling to push through the dips and the challenges. The cheerleader doesn't need to be peppy or exuberant like a cheer team member, but they can show up to listen and offer quiet words of encouragement, but it's leading by providing support from an emotional and psychological standpoint rather than the operational support of the logistics leadership posture. And the cheerleader has a lot of similarities to the next posture, but distinctly different is this fourth posture of that of the mentor. Everyone can use inspiration and motivation here and there, and while this is akin to cheerleading, it's inspiring through one's own experience, action, and words. Generally, this is also attached to sharing advice and new ways of thinking, so think of this as the live-by-example-ness of being an individual contributor, but also talking about it in a way that inspires other people to action. I think on top of the excellence associated with an individual contributor, there is that layer of self-awareness, vulnerability, and confident humility that is needed to then go out and talk about your wins and losses in a way that inspires others and can offer practical solutions to problems those you lead might be facing. So while you might think of this next posture as overlapping with that of the mentor, considering how I show up as a coach, I think of this next fifth leadership posture as distinctly separate, the posture of the coach. The coach asks generous questions that spur learning, growth, and introspection, and also puts in the emotional work to hold space and listen to others. This posture involves a lot of focusing on the time and emotional labor invested in listening rather than speaking, building trust and relationships, and reflecting, as opposed to giving specific instructions or advice like a mentor would. There's also the sixth leadership posture, which I think a lot of more experienced people fall into, especially if they've mentored a bit and got a high from having people find their knowledge valuable. And I call this posture the ancient one in the cave. It's all about leading through knowledge transfer and trying to help those less experienced than us not make the same mistakes that we did. And the reason I specifically call it the ancient one in the cave is that there's also the isolation that comes from being a cave, where you're not exposed to the outside world and how it's changing. And I also want to warn people that this is a leadership posture that you don't want to lean too hard into. Mentoring is much better than taking on this posture, and I'd assert that coaching is even more effective in helping people discover the insight for themselves and in enrolling people in a better way forward. When you are too addicted to giving advice, it's easy to silence new ideas and innovations by ignoring new information that might have changed or a new context that is different since you took the journey yourself. There's nothing wrong with sharing information and helping others. I think it's super generous. But when you're doing it from a position of expertise, remember to share the nuance and context for your information, as there can always be new methodologies, cultural zeitgeists, and technology that might make your well-meaning advice outdated. Thus, if you're the type to draw on your extensive experience, remember to stay curious and humble as you confidently steer others away from common pitfalls. And on the flip side of the ancient one in the cave, there is the seventh leadership posture, and that is the disruptor. This is the leader who is constantly sounding the clarion call for change, who pushes for innovation and disruption, and is willing to challenge the very basic tenets of your organizational culture or even what you do as a business. While a disruptor is often exactly what larger organizations need, disruptors also have a low tolerance for waiting for change to occur. So one thing you need to be wary of as a disruptor is coming off as too impatient or brash, and really focusing on the skill of enrolling people in the vision that you have of the future. While impatience and brashness aren't inherently bad things, if you're not careful, you can move too quickly to enroll others in your way forward. Disruptors often clash the most with ancient ones in the cave, but if these leaders in these two postures can work together, you'll find an amazing synergy of experience tempered with innovation. So this is a quick overview of the seven postures for a leader to take that I've identified, and you really can adopt these postures from any position in an organization. Also, I want to re-emphasize that not only can you switch from posture to posture, you actively should be switching based on the context that you're in. The best leaders I know have worked to foster each of these, or aspects of each, and know how and when to change from one to another. And you may have noticed that I have left the more stereotypical command and control posture of leadership out. That is most definitely intentional, and I hope you tune in next week when I dive into why I excluded this more then. If we could all start reframing how we think about leadership and really lean into the postures of supporting others and creating more leaders, we can get that cascading ripple effect that has the potential to change the world at large. So how might you more readily embrace the idea of being a leader? And what posture do you want to adopt today? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a monstrous day.